Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining us again today. I am, of course, the Porkmeister, Mike Parry, and with me today, as always, Leslie and Jones. Leslie Ann, I hope you are well. Are the outrageous arrows and slings of fortune keeping you in good shape?
Not bad, Mike. Thank you very much. I've never been so busy, I have to say.
Good. I'm glad.
Working on 448 pages of Lennon proofs and doing picture spreads and, of course, the other book that I've been working on, which is coming out in the autumn, and recording and doing this with you, which is always the greatest pleasure of the week.
Well, exactly.
So kicking along.
That's right. Thousands of people would like to be in your place, let me tell you.
And wouldn't
they
just?
All from Planet Porky. Anyway, listen, a story that's dominated even the front pages all week has been the Johnny Depp Amber Heard bust-up. I mean, amazing that's taking place in the High Court in London, right, rather than somewhere in LA, over allegations that Johnny Depp is a wife beater. That was a newspaper headline, which he's challenging. And he says he's not doing it for the money. He says he's doing it because he wants to clear his reputation. And in all his evidence so far, he said any man who attacks a woman is an animal and all this. I mean, first of all, Johnny Depp, he is one of the world's most famous actors, isn't he?
Well, he is. And it's all horribly unedifying, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it's being heard in London because he's suing The Sun for libel or NGN newspapers. And so it has to take place in the High Court here. But I mean, it's been the most vile, shocking, undignified stories plastered all over the papers yet again. I mean, they're all rubbing their hands with glee because there's so much hideous material coming out every day.
I mean, some of it is truly hideous. I couldn't read some of it. It was such disgusting personal behaviour, you know, individually and that they've indulged in. But also, how can two people who, you know, decided to get married end up hating each other so much? Because that's clearly what the feelings towards each other are in what we've heard so far.
Oh, well, it's very common, isn't it? Do you remember that film? I think Michael Douglas and Catherine...
War of the Roses.
That's the one.
Yeah.
I mean, they went from being passionately in love to hating each other this much, didn't they?
Yeah.
Do you remember that wonderful scene where she was cooking some special dinner party?
Oh, don't mention it.
She went upstairs and you know what he did.
Yeah, and one of the guests came back in the dining room and said, I wouldn't fancy the fish if I were you. Yeah, it was horrible.
Classic.
Horrible.
But I mean, look, they're a match made in hell, these two, aren't they?
Definitely.
When all this material gets dragged out about him on a flight, you know, the famous the Boston plane incident,
yes,
where he had cocaine, whiskey pills, champagne, and then he was passing out on the toilet floor in the plane.
Yes.
Attacking her on an aircraft, which is a really dangerous thing to do in midair.
Well, if it's true, because, of course, he challenges all this and said he's never attacked her, he's not a wife beater. He's actually said in some most recent evidence that, oh, she just compiled all these allegations about me just to be able to reel them off in court. I mean, it's quite amazing stuff.
Well, where did she get the recording of him howling during the flight?
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to be anybody else, is it?
No.
I think he's digging himself in very deep here.
Well,
the evidence doesn't make him look good. He does come across as a tormentor and an abuser, but then they're going to call his previous two relationships, Vanessa Paradis and Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
And Vanessa Paradis has stated for the record that he's not an abuser.
That's right. But Amber Heard, of course, is the wife who's subject of this this whole contention. She's going to get in court and list a load of allegations that he knocked her about, isn't she?
Well, she has also got pictures of the bruises that he allegedly caused her.
He says he didn't cause them. You know, this is.
Can he remember? I mean, if he's out of his skull half the time on narcotics and booze, you know, it's. I don't know. Was this a wise move? I'm saying not.
Yeah. Well, I know I should know this, but I can't figure out if there's a jury in this case or not.
I haven't heard mention of one.
I haven't either, and I can't work it out because.
Do you get a jury in a libel case? I'm not sure.
Well, you do because I remember in the past, and again, I should know the answer to this one. We should know our law, or at least I should. Juries make the award, don't they, for damages at the end?
Well, it's possible, but I haven't haven't sat in on a libel case for a long, long time.
Neither have I.
I can't remember whether there was a jury. I thought juries were only for criminal cases.
Juries are the reason why I think that so much has been written about this around the case rather than just the case itself is there can't be a jury, because then we would be bound by sub judice and not being able to mention anything about the relationship except what came out in court. So I have to assume there's not a jury and there's just a judge. And you get the feeling also, don't you, although you can't prejudge these things, that whichever side wins might just get a nominal, you know, sum of damages, because everybody would be so appalled by the behaviour of each of the two parties.
Yeah, I don't think, as he said, it's nothing to do with money.
Yeah.
But if it is about clearing his name, he ain't got a hope in hell.
Well, you say that, but I mean, you just don't know, you know. You don't know whether these people are so crazy in this the world of Hollywood and all that. And as you quite rightly say, you know, on drugs most of the time, and admits that a pint of red wine for breakfast or a large whiskey for breakfast and all that kind of stuff. I mean, pretty bizarre behaviour. Am I right in thinking also, if I got it confused, that Johnny Depp made a video in Australia attacking the Australian authorities because he actually smuggled his dogs into?
That's right. That was a scandal too, because they took two dogs in from Los Angeles to Australia, forget where.
And was that
Sydney.
With this Amber Heard lady?
Yeah, and they didn't have, and they were together at the time. They didn't have paperwork and they hadn't put them in quarantine or anything.
Yeah.
And then they decided that they were in the right anyway, and he did make a film attacking them. Yeah. So, you know, the problem is here is delusion. You've got people who think that they exist outside of the law, beyond the law, that the law doesn't apply to them.
Yes.
And you've got a dysfunctional binge fest of a marriage and quite a large age gap. He's 57, she's 34 now. This is not when they were married. But, you know, that's nearly 20 years age gap. It's asking for trouble at the best of times.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And yet I can still only see Johnny Depp as Captain Sparrow in, you know, in all the...
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean films, yeah.
A.K.A. Keith Richards.
Yes, that's right.
Modelled his look on, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. And he admits now Keith Richards is one of his heroes. Keith Richards played his father, didn't he, one of the Pirates of the Caribbean films?
Keith Richards smoked his father. Do you remember that?
Oh, God, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
He took his father's ashes, put them in a spliff, and he inhaled him.
Oh, God.
I mean, what kind of a person does that?
God knows. I don't know. Anyway, there we go. Talking about perhaps a nicer person, did you know that as we record... on this very day in 1972, Donny Osmond achieved his first ever number one in this country with "And They Called It Puppy Love."
I just knew that you were going to do that. I can trump that, because do you know that we are related to the Osmonds on my father's side?
No, you can't be. No.
Well, this story went round for years and years and years in my family.
Yeah.
His ancestors hail from Merthyr Tydfil, where my ancestors hail from, and they were the Merthyr Mormons that went out to Utah.
The Merthyr Mormons,
Yeah, they were. It sounds like a band, doesn't it? The Merthyr Mormons. They were the ones who went out to Utah and formed a new community out there, which became, you know, the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon movement.
Yes.
And it was always said that our particular line of Joneses was directly related to the Osmonds through the same line.
Right.
And Johnny went back to Merthyr in about 2007, I think it was.
Yeah.
And he did the Donny Comes Home show.
Good God.
So I had to restrain myself from going backstage, knocking on the door and saying the line that all celebrities dread.
Yeah.
You know we're related, don't you?
Yeah, I bet so as well. What an amazing phenomenon the Osmonds were, because they were just a bunch of kids. They're a bit like the Jacksons, really, except they had big white teeth and very little talent, whereas at least the Jacksons were...
harsh.
Yeah, well, it is a bit harsh, I agree. But they were a singing family on the Andy Williams show, weren't they? And then they came out of that and, you know, got a few bubblegum type hits. I remember I was working on the Chester Chronicle when Donny got this first number one hit. And I mean, even in, you know, a sleepy little town like Chester in the northwest of England, there were Donny Osmond conventions, you know, 10 and 12 year old girls turning out in the streets with, you know, Wheel of Donny posters and all that kind of stuff. It did have quite an effect on, you know, young girls of that age in that era.
Oh, sure. Not only the singing troop of boys, but also Donnie with his sister Marie.
That's right.
And
yeah.
also little Jimmy Osmond. Do you remember him? The little tiny brother.
I've never felt more ashamed of somebody singing a song than hearing little Jimmy Osmond sing, "I be a long haired love from Liverpool." Oh, it was excruciating.
Yeah, but they were massively successful. They still are.
Yeah.
Donnie still sells out every house every time he does a concert.
Yeah.
Marie is still very, very popular. So,
yes.
You know, I don't think we should give them too hard a time.
Well, as a showbiz phenomenon, certainly not. But they made one record that they said proved that they could mix it with the best rock and rollers, called
Crazy Horses.
That's right. And they weren't even playing the guitars, apparently. Although if they were, I apologise for not acknowledging their talent. But I mean, they were basically.
Yeah, well, come on, the Monkees didn't even play their guitars,
true.
Did they?
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, look, I shouldn't be too harsh. I did have to go and review them once when I was working on the Birmingham Mail in London. They I don't think they lasted at the top too long because this was a stage show at the London Palladium, and Donnie's wife had just had their first baby, and all Donnie did was literally run around with signs pinned to his back with a picture of his little baby and the baby's name on it and all that. It was like, you know, he'd suddenly given up being a pop star because he'd become a father.
I think they did give up being pop stars, but they moved into the sort of mainstream MOR, didn't they? And
yes.
Well, he's still massive. And look, they do.
Yeah.
I think Donnie and Jimmy have been over here for years doing pantomimes.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, yeah. Old little
Jimmy. Oh, yes, they have.
Oh, yes, they have. Yes, you're absolutely right. Old,
you know,
little Jimmy.
Each to their own.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Just getting a bit more somber for a moment. I've seen Kate Garraway on television again this week, okay? And I have to say, you know, I don't know Kate very well, but I've been to Christmas parties and that kind of stuff that she's been there, you know what I mean? Sort of corporate events and all that. Always found her to be a lovely lady. She, of course, is a presenter on Good Morning Britain, and she'll be taking over sort of 4 days a week from now on because Piers and Susanna have gone on holiday. But the poor woman, the terror she's going through with her husband, Derek Draper, still being in a coma from a terribly severe attack of COVID-19. Your heart's got to go out to that lady.
Oh, of course it does. I mean, nobody would want to be in her position.
No.
But she's doing the right thing. She has to go back to work.
Oh, definitely.
She has to restore some form of normality for her family as much as anything else.
Yeah.
And we have to be realistic. Derek may never come out of his coma. And if he does, it's highly likely that he'll be afflicted with brain damage for the rest of his life.
It may not just be brain damage because it's attacked all his organs. At one time, he was on dialysis because his kidneys weren't working. He had to have oxygen pumped into his lungs because his lungs weren't working. I mean, it's horrendous. The whole thing is horrendous. And having spent, you know, quite a long time in hospital myself at the height of my heart problems, it's like an endless task, you know what I mean? It's a... But I feel so sorry because, of course,
we've got two
little children as well. And you're quite right. The only thing Kate could do now is say, you know, is make sure she gets up every morning with a purpose to the day rather than doing what she's been doing, which she said is just waiting for the phone to ring, you know.
And the other thing is that you're grieving, you're bereaved,
yeah.
But you haven't had a funeral, have you?
Yeah.
I mean, we know he's hanging on, but he's dead really, isn't he?
Well, oh, blimey, you know, you don't have to talk about it, do you? I knew Derek years ago. He was a political lobbyist, you know, and he was a very brash, cocky sort of a bloke. He worked with Campbell and all that. We've said that before. And just to see him reduced to this is really horrible. But listen, I've got something that could bring a light into our lives. And that is literally a machine, which I've discovered through one of my medical journals, which you can stick in your ear, okay? And it sends a beam of bright light down your ear canal, whatever that's called, and into
your Eustachian tube.
Is that the Eustachian tube? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it goes into your brain, lights your brain up, and makes you more alert and more full of energy. It's called the Human Charger, and it says it's a pocket-sized light therapy device, a control box with earbuds, but the earbuds are not padded earbuds. They have light transmission in them. It boosts energy levels using the light to stimulate the brain via the ear canal. You put the earbuds in, turn it on, and bright light flows to photosensitive areas of the brain and it stimulates something called noradrenaline, which raises blood sugar levels to provide energy. And all that happens in 12 minutes. Do you think I need one of those, Leslie-Ann?
What absolute tosh. I've never heard anything so stupid in all my life.
Why?
First of all, you haven't got a retina in your ear. Your retina is in your eye. You know, you're not picking up any sound waves in your eyes.
No,
are
it's
you?
Light. It's and you're not, light.
I know, but
your brain.
You can't pick up light waves via your ear. So I think this is a con.
No, well, this says you can. Anyway, an expert verdict says some studies have shown light therapy helps seasonal affective disorder. That's people who feel sad in the winter, basically, which can cause tiredness. These areas of the brain are normally stimulated by sunlight. So the idea is that it's sort of, you know, it's simulating sunlight into your brain. And it might work. I'm going to get one. It's only 179 quid.
Yeah, they saw you coming. I cannot think for the life of me that sunlight gets through your thick skull, not yours. I'm not saying you've got a thick skull.
Yeah, I have.
One has a thick skull. We all do.
Yeah.
Because we need that thick bone to protect our brains, our very delicate brains.
Yes.
But I don't believe the sunlight goes in through the skull. I think it's going in through the eyes.
Well, it is. But it goes in through your eyes. Sunlight goes
you
in through your eyes.
You can't put it through your ear.
But it reaches your brain eventually. It goes through. Look, the eye is, you know, a bit of your head, and light goes in through your eye and reaches your brain. Why can't you shoot light up your ear, which is through your ear canal to your brain? I
you
can.
You might as well
work.
Stick it up your nose.
Well, maybe.
Or elsewhere.
Maybe.
I might think of somewhere else you could stick it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Leslie-Ann. If you wouldn't mind retaining those thoughts to yourself, please, because this is a family show, I would be very grateful indeed. Yeah, that's it, isn't it? You know, another bit of smut in the old Planet Porky podcast.
Sorry, Mike.
Now, listen, we've been talking in previous podcasts about language skills. You know, thanks to those nice people at Babbel, I'm trying to improve things. But I've seen a report this week which says that poor foreign language skills amongst the general population, and of course all this starts in school, costs the economy of this country, it's obviously shot to bits at the moment, obviously, but in a normal year, it would cost the economy of this country about 3.5 billion quid. Because we simply have this superior attitude that we speak English and therefore so should everybody else. Now, you're a linguist yourself, so how do you view that?
Well, The Guardian had it actually even worse at 48 billion quid.
Wow.
And it is this assumption, isn't it, that everyone speaks English, so I don't have to bother learning a foreign language.
Yeah.
What it is a tax on growth. So small, medium companies who can't afford the language specialists employed by the global companies to get things right. Mm. So businesses can fall foul of all sorts of regulatory issues and cultural misunderstandings when they're doing business in other countries whose language they don't understand.
Right.
So I'd say to all these kids out there who haven't got a job, all the graduates, all the students, kind of, you know, there's loads of job losses in this country right now. Get some languages under your belt, because all these businesses need to shape up and start communicating properly with the rest of the world.
Yes. Have you actually used your languages, though? I mean, have they been useful to you? You've travelled the world, obviously, in your job. But I'm a big believer in if you speak English, you've got a huge advantage in life, because so does almost everybody else in all forms of business.
Well, that was the case in our day, wasn't it, as we say. But it's not the case anymore. You can't just assume. I mean, the most widely spoken languages in the world are Chinese, Mandarin Chinese, and Spanish.
Yeah.
So my son learned Mandarin Chinese at Dulwich College.
Did he?
When he went to school.
Wow.
He also studied Spanish.
Yeah.
And my younger daughter has Spanish. French is not really very useful in the world anymore because it's not widely spoken globally.
No, it's not.
But I think, you know, we should be looking to train our young people in being able to communicate in languages other than the mother tongue.
Yeah. You see, the only thing I would have agreed about with the European Union, the common market, for want of a better word, is for us all to speak the same language, and that should have been English. Because how many times do you see Angela Merkel, probably the most powerful woman in the world, how many times do you see her on British TV making some speech in Germany about something that affects this country, you know, about the economy or trade or something like that? Never, never. And that's because she doesn't speak any English and we don't speak German.
Yeah, well, why? The arrogance is astonishing here. Why should she learn English?
Well, if she wants to communicate with us, she should.
Our MPs should be able to speak German. It works both ways.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure.
I think, no, to answer your question, which I didn't get a chance to get a word in edgeways, because we're banging on there, right?
But, yes.
I think that my languages have always been useful to me, and I found myself in situations all down the years where, thank God I speak French, thank God I speak Spanish, whatever. And I don't think we can assume going forward, if we want to remain a significant power globally, that we can rely on English anymore.
Yeah, okay. Well, you may well be right. Certainly, I think there's a balance in America now between Spanish speakers from Hispanic countries and English speakers. It's about 50-50, I think. I think a lot of the
stuff... Well, in sheer numbers, right? Yeah. So if you look at the number of people who are born Spanish-speaking, you know, it's their mother tongue, the number of people, the billions of people born speaking Chinese, well, they have to learn it, obviously, but they're born into Chinese-speaking households, is what I mean. So in terms of sheer numbers, you know, we've got to actually bring ourselves up a notch there.
Well, I still don't think it's much use speaking Mandarin Chinese unless you're working over there. Nobody else speaks it anywhere else in the world. You know,
it's a major business language nowadays.
Well, is it? I don't see.
Oh, yes, it is. Have a look.
Yeah. Well, you're probably. I'm sure you are. You're right about most things. now, tell me this, Leslie Ann. Do you know who Dr. Bashar Mukherjee is?
I probably should. Is that the wife of Rishi Sunak or someone?
No, it's not actually, funny enough. But it's a trick question because she was on this morning. She is a doctor, obviously, and she was talking about the current row about whether or not people who work at hospitals should have their car parking paid for by the hospital. You know what I mean? Big row going on. But she is also Miss England. She's that beauty queen who's also a doctor.
And is that still going on, Miss England, Miss World, Miss...
She was Miss England 2019. And I think she's coming to the end of her reign, you know. And but she's also a practising doctor, been working through the COVID. What an achievement in life to be, you know, crowned as the most beautiful looking girl in this country and also to have qualified as a doctor. That's quite an achievement, isn't it?
Well, is it an achievement to be beautiful?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
No, I don't. I disagree. That's something you're born with. And it doesn't take an awful lot of effort to go in for a beauty contest.
Hang on, that's a bit harsh. What about in a...
No, it's not. What takes the effort is to train as a doctor. That is impressive.
You've done that as well.
But that is impressive, whatever gender you are.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, what about the inner beauty? You know, beauty queens don't just parade up and down in sewing costumes these days. They have to communicate and they have to give up their personality and their view on life. I mean, I think you're being very harsh on this young lady.
Yeah, well, we all have to do that. I'm not being harsh on her at all. I'm sure she'd absolutely agree with me. She probably did it for the money, you know, especially if she was training as a junior doctor or whatever.
Yeah.
She's allowed to be beautiful. Yeah. It's much more impressive to me that she's a doctor.
Oh, dear me. You can be very hard on these people sometimes, Leslie Ann.
I'm not being hard on her. I'm being hard on you.
That doesn't change. right, OK. At that juncture, we'll have a short commercial break. Let Leslie Ann get over her giggling. Okay, folks, so you are listening to... God, I'm getting all confused here now. Because
you've gone all red, haven't you?
I haven't gone all red. I've gone all sort of, got to get my ducks in a row when I'm talking to you about beauty queens. Now, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky, of course, and Leslie Ann is on top form. Let me ask you about a phenomenon that's happening, Leslie Ann, which has only just come to my attention, and I'll base it on Jodie Comer, who, of course, is the Killing Eve actress. I know you're not a big TV fan yourself, but everybody knows about Killing Eve. She's got a boyfriend now in America, or he's American, and he's gone to see her in Liverpool, which is her hometown. He's an international lacrosse player. I didn't know that lacrosse teams were sort of international, but this guy's very good. But because he's expressed some support for Donald Trump in the past, he's now become a victim of something called cancel culture. And you and I talked about J.K. Rowling in a previous podcast about how all those young actors and actresses who became very famous by starring in her Harry Potter films, she's also become a member of the cancel culture. Do you know what this cancel culture is?
Yes, it's all about rewriting history, isn't it? It's about people who want to wipe out aspects of our past yeah. and pretend that certain things didn't happen, to take down statues to people that we shouldn't revere
You're
anymore.
You're absolutely right. But it's also, because I've been researching it, if you are of the woke mentality, which is, means that, you know, they have a completely different view on life these days to the one we had, and somebody else doesn't agree with them, they have no tolerance for a different point of view. And in fact, apparently, they rate free speech as very, very low in priorities in modern life. I find
that extremely worrying. No, it's awful because, I mean, I live with three young people, my own children.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to have an opinion on anything anymore because you are wrong and we are right. And this attitude will not stop prevailing until your generation has died out. Yeah. You've all disappeared. And then, you know, we're right about this. What worries me is that a lot of their information comes from the internet.
Yes.
They're getting a lot of half-truths. My son turned around to me the other day and said, yeah. well, Margaret Thatcher was a war criminal. I said, where'd you get that from? Mm. I said, she would have been tried and incarcerated had yeah. she been a war criminal.
Yeah.
No, there were all these countries in the world that she wasn't allowed to go to on her book tour because she would have been arrested.
Rubbish.
I said, I don't think that's true.
It's not true.
You know, I think actually they take a grain of truth is yeah. what's happening a lot of the time.
Yes.
And then they run with this unfinished ball
yeah.
and they are blinkered to the way things really were. Mm. They weren't born anyway.
Yeah.
And they're only absorbing the little bit of history that they want to believe. And that's yeah. a very dangerous place to be.
It certainly is. It was Nick Robinson, you know, quite well-established broadcaster for BBC and ITV and everywhere else, who said that he had this conversation with his children, and they're the ones who said, no, we don't rate free speech at all, because if you allow free speech, then people are guilty of hate speech. We won't have that. And he said, but people can express their opinions as long as they're not unlawful. No, we don't agree. And the thing about the cancel culture is then social media organise all sorts of campaigns to try and squeeze you out of your job. And one of the victims is Lawrence Fox, who, you know, became very controversial. He made certain statements about, you know, female nominees for MPs' positions and all that. And now finds, he says, I don't know if I've got a career left. I mean, God blimey. The world isn't half changing. But anyway, look, that's something else. Were you at all a fan of, if not the film, the music of Ennio Morricone? Da 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 da.
Oh, Ennio Morricone. He, what I think is incredible about him,
yeah.
well, he's just died, hasn't he?
He has, yeah.
But he refused to speak any language other than Italian his entire life.
Really?
Which goes against everything we've been saying before about being a linguist.
Certainly does.
But he was one of the most successful, one of the most romantic of all screen composers, yeah. I'd have to say.
Yeah.
And his scores were suffused with romance. The films were not romantic films.
No, they weren't. They all went around blowing each other away. Kind of,
yeah, the scores were loaded with yearning and heartbreak and rapture, so yeah. gorgeous. And the music created this sort of dream landscape, didn't it? And it yeah. elevated some quite average films, really, to more than they actually were.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I liked The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, and I was a child when that came out. I remember it, hearing it over the speakers at Chester Football Club. And, you know, I used to go there when I was about eight or something like that, you know. But that was the third film in the trilogy of the dollar films, wasn't it?
Yes.
A Fistful of Dollars, A Few Dollars More, and then The Good and the Bad, the Ugly. And I swear to you, I've watched the first two a couple of times because I, you know, think Clint Eastwood's great. And there was nothing to them except the music. You're absolutely right.
Do you remember that film, awful, awful film, Once Upon a Time in America?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Well, he did the soundtrack for that, the most wondrous soundtrack,
yeah.
but it was a really dreadful film. So, you know, you can actually save a movie
yeah.
with a soundtrack, which is why they're Oscar-worthy, isn't it?
Yeah, no,
but I think, you know, as well, his music, there was something about it. It told a story. It told a story about how the past can drape itself yeah. over the present.
Yeah.
We're being poetic here today, aren't we?
Yes, well, I totally agree. But the opening bars of The Good and Bad, the Ugly, you know, wow, 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 wow. That's a pretty good.
Have you been practicing that?
No, but I thought it was pretty good. That actually is a coyote in the desert screaming, you see. And yeah. and that's
what I haven't met many coyotes. I couldn't really vouch for that.
No, I couldn't either. But that's exactly what he tried to do in his music, was to a bit like, really, your old pal David Bowie when he wrote Ground Control to Major Tom. All the sounds he used in that were supposed to sort of simulate like rocket sounds and things, weren't they?
And it was a lot more hard in those days, because a lot harder, I should say, because they didn't have the technology. You know, there was nothing digital. You had to...
Exactly.
And when you hear some of the ways they created some of these sound effects,
yes,
like, you know, the Doctor Who, that sort of twang that's over the theme at the beginning of that.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
There's somebody's front door key being run up and down some piano strings and such things. You know, they were very inventive about how they created soundtracks, whereas today you can do all of that with a computer in a studio.
The electronics, yeah. Now, listen, talking about that, making sounds and all that, I have to say, we've already spoken about Ringo Starr on his 80th birthday and, you know, he's doing well and all that kind of stuff. I was astonished to see that the man he replaced in the Beatles, right at the start, I think it was 1962, but you correct me, Pete Best was the drummer then, and suddenly Brian Epstein, the manager of the Beatles, had a quick conversation with him, said, look, I'm awfully sorry, Pete, you know, but we're going to take Ringo Starr from Rory and the Hurricanes, I think it was, or something like that. Pete Best then was pushed out of the Beatles, and the rest is history. And Ringo Starr became one of the most famous men in the world, one of the most privileged, one of the most adored men in the world. And yet Pete Best, on his 80th birthday, sent Ringo a message saying, I suppose I might as well have a great birthday. I don't know how he could have done that for what he lost in life.
Well, did he really lose out? I mean, the thing about
come
Pete,
on, Leslie, he, no, he lost
he's
out
a lovely
people.
Guy. Have you ever met him?
Pete Best, no.
Yeah, I have. He's a lovely man.
Right.
He's never been bitter. He has a few regrets, but, you know, he went on to have a great life.
Yeah.
He continued
did he go
to
have a great life?
Yes.
What has?
Well, I'm about to tell you if you don't keep interrupting
me. Oh, right, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he continued to have a music career. He did become a civil servant for a bit, but he then formed the Pete Best Band, and he's been in demand all over the world because of his connection to the Beatles.
Yeah.
And he's never stopped playing. His mother, Mona Best, was the very first manager of the Beatles and their facilitator. It was thanks to her that they did their deal with Brian Epstein.
Right.
But it wasn't Brian Epstein who sacked Pete.
No.
It was actually George Martin, the producer, because he found Pete's timing inadequate. But Pete did actually get into Abbey Road Studios in June 62, you're quite right, with the rest of the Beatles, and he did record with them.
Wow.
And of course, his mother founded the Casbah Coffee Club
in the cellar underneath her house.
The cellar bar underneath the house where the Beatles performed before they were actually the Beatles. But, you know, he's a really lovely guy. It doesn't surprise me in the slightest that he would wish Ringo a happy birthday, because, look, the Beatles had their upsets, their breakdowns, their all kinds of troubles went with being the Beatles.
Yeah.
Pete managed to maintain his connection to them without having to go through all that crap.
Well, and about 180 million, which I think is what Ringo Starr's worth these days in the Sunday Times rich list. So
can't take it with him, can he?
Well, can't take it with him, but he's had such an incredible life. The quote I remember from all of that was John Lennon saying, Pete was a better drummer, but Ringo was a better Beatle. But what you've just told me now, I don't feel so bad for Pete if he was actually replaced in the group, because technically he wasn't up to it.
No, he wasn't. And I think, you know, he's been very accepting of that.
Yeah.
He did get a payout about 30 years after the fact.
Yeah.
He did get quite a chunk of money off the Beatles for his contribution in the early days.
Oh, really?
So, you know, don't feel sorry for him, because he's not in any way bitter at all.
No, I look back on my career, as I'm sure you look back on yours, and there's been occasions when, you know, people have done horrible things to deprive me of a role that I should have had. You know what I mean? I know we all think that, but, you know, this was a time when I was in hospital and I couldn't respond, and I was waiting for a heart transplant and all that. And terrible things happened, you know, which misshaped the rest of my career. And I am quite bitter about the things that happened then, because I could see how that could have panned out for the next 15 years. You know what I mean?
It's not worth being bitter.
Say again.
It isn't worth being bitter.
Well,
that
you
will
said it's not
eat,
worth
eat
being
away.
Bitter, but, you know, those, you remember those things. You only get one life, and if you have taken away from you the possibility of being the Beatles drummer, I I'm sure he's a nice guy, and I'm sure, as you said, he came to terms with it. I would never have come to terms with that. Every day I woke up and saw another Beatles hit at number one, and, you know, another Sergeant Pepper's, you know, tribute and all that. I'd feel awful about it. But then again,
well,
you know,
he's a very organic guy, and he's you know, grateful for his blessings in his own life.
Yeah.
And he's had the kind of life that most of us wouldn't have lived.
Yeah.
I think you have to let your bitterness go, Mike, and you have to be in the here and now and to look forward to the future rather than keep feeling bad about things that happened in your past.
Well, no, I'm not necessarily bitter. I'm not really, because I
said you were.
Well, I feel bitter about that, but I'm not carrying bitterness with me day in, day out, because I just had to go in a different direction. I still did, I think, very well. You know, I had a great career in broadcasting, for which I'm very grateful. But somebody around that time, they upset the apple cart when they didn't need to, and everybody would have benefited from, you know, the status quo being put back after I came out of hospital. But look, that's not a moan. That is just an observation. Now, are you going to get yourself an e-scooter now that they've been made legal in this country, Leslie Ann?
No, I am not.
Why not? I could see you whizzing around Dulwich on the e-scooter there, you know, rucksack on your back.
I don't think so. I mean, they're not really a form of exercise, are they? Just scooting along on an electrified thing. But also, you can't buy one at the moment. You can only rent them.
Exactly. But you can rent it on a permanent rental basis.
Yeah. Why would I?
Well, because it gets you around. I think they're great.
I've got a car outside.
Again?
I've got a car outside.
I know you've got a car outside, but if you want to just sort of nip down to the shops or something like that, jump on a scooter, whiz down, whiz back, you know, whiz round to a neighbour's or something like that, you have to get into a car and start it and then...
Yeah, but where do you put one of these when you get to the shop? Where do you put it? Someone's going to nick it.
Pick it up and put it over your shoulder.
I'm not doing that. No, definitely not doing that.
I bet you millions...
After you. Yeah, well, I'll come and watch you do that and take photos everywhere.
I bet millions of people will. Listen, we've had conversations in the past about footwear and the number of pairs of shoes you've got and all that. I was absolutely astonished to read that... I'll read this to you. Shoppers queued in the pouring rain from 4 a.m. to buy trainers that cost £1,800, the Air Jordan 1 OG Dior shoes, only on sale in the UK at the fashion house's flagship New Bond Street store and nearby Selfridges. And even though we've just come out of lockdown, these people are queuing there in the rain from 4 o'clock in the morning. Why would anybody be so mad as to do that for a pair? They're not even trainers. They're called sneakers. They're like those bumper boots we used to wear as kids.
Absolutely nuts. There's no way. More money than sense.
Yeah.
I mean, my son, who's gigantic, he takes a size 12 to 13 shoe.
Right.
So I come down the stairs in the morning because they're all living with me at the moment.
Yes.
If I fell in one of my son's shoes, I'd never get back out. They are boats.
Right.
Absolute boats. And there are five pairs of his massive great boats all around the front door, plus, you know, the girls' shoes there and every day. You know, who needs another pair of trainers? And he said last week, I need another pair of these Nikes. Why do you? Yeah. Look at all those shoes downstairs.
Yeah.
But there seems to be something about having the latest model that's got right under their skin. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I don't personally understand it, but then we are of a different generation. Now, during your time as showbiz writer extraordinaire, Leslie Ann, did you ever come across that very intriguing EastEnders actress, Gillian Taylor-Forth?
Oh, God, yes.
Right, because...
Poor old Jill. You remember her her court case, wasn't it? Wasn't she suing the Sun as well?
I'll tell you all about it. I was at the Sun at the time. What happened was her boyfriend then was a guy called, was it Jeff Knights?
Jeff Knights it was, yes.
That's right, yeah, Jeff Knights, who I think is now dead, isn't he?
Maybe.
I think he is.
I didn't follow his career.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jeff, if you're not dead and you're listening, my apologies. But I think he sadly did. But no, the case was all about whether or not they'd stopped in a lay-by to indulge in oral sex, okay, in their Range Rover. And the Sun newspaper reported that they had. Jeff Knights decided he was going to challenge this, or it was said at the time it was his initiative, and that it wasn't true, and that, in fact, he'd been feeling ill and they'd stopped because he needed to throw up and all that kind of stuff, okay? Now, I remember at the time, very, very worried because it could have cost the newspaper £1 million. You know, it was a big one. And miraculously, because a load of decisions had gone against newspapers in those days, you know, brought by showbiz people, the Sun actually won it. And it was such a shock to Gillian Taylor-Forth. She collapsed, if you remember, where would this have been? Would it have been a High Court, I suppose? She collapsed in the High Court and had to be taken out in an ambulance, taken home. Because far from being awarded £1 million, they were ordered to pay the court costs, which were going to add up to £1 million. It was a very strange turnaround.
Yeah, but the Sun had George Carman on retainer at that point, didn't they?
Probably.
And they weren't going to win it. I mean, I knew they weren't going to win it when somebody produced some footage of her at a party. It was an EastEnders party.
Absolutely right.
And she was, let's say, making love to a salami.
She was simulating the act she was accused of on a big sausage. You're absolutely right. Yes. Yeah. That sounds rather
so,
rude.
So, you know, there was no hope really there. But, I mean, she has had some kind of thugs for boyfriends, hasn't she? And I had a little look at this because, like her co-star, Barbara Windsor, she's obviously attracted to bad boys.
Yes.
And is it the sort of devil you know thing? I think it's often to do with the kind of men that a woman has known in her childhood. And she obviously felt comfortable, as Barbara did, with the more thuggish type.
Right.
And if you hang around with guys like that, you're going to get yourself into trouble.
Yeah. Well, the reason we're talking about this is because her latest boyfriend is, if they're still together, and I think he might be a sort of recent ex or something, you know, he was shot in the stomach in a wood near Enfield in North London when he said he had a rendezvous with somebody, you know. And he's now recovering in hospital from his stomach wound. But what astonishes me is that drama has imitated real life because, I mean, that's the sort of character she played in EastEnders, didn't she?
Well, yes, but, you know, nobody's going to go shooting anyone in the stomach unless something has occurred to invite that to happen. So there's obviously some scenario behind that that we don't yet know about, but he must have done something to upset somebody.
Well, he might have been an innocent victim for all we know. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Anyway, what happened was the Sun then had a sort of bang to rights for years because they didn't have £1 million, right? She and Jeff Knight. I think it's one of the reasons why they launched the action in the first place. And so what the paper did was they took, like, over the next 3 or 4 years, a load of exclusives, you know what I mean, from Gillian Taylor-Forth on the set of EastEnders, all this and that and the rest and all that. So nobody ended up giving anybody any money in the end. It became a working relationship, which, of course, is the way that Fleet Street often works, isn't it?
Oh, sure it is, yeah. I mean, who had the last laugh there?
Yeah. No, absolutely right. Now, I've read some very sad news for me, Leslie Ann, and that is the fact that Boeing are now completely stopping production of the jumbo jet. And I love jumbo jets. Now, you've probably flown across the Atlantic more times than me, but I've probably spent more time in America than you because I lived there for 2 or 3 years. But do you love jumbo jets as much as I do?
Do you know the ones I loved? They weren't the jumbos. They were the Virgin Atlantic ones with the upstairs bit.
Yes.
What were those planes?
Yes.
What were they called?
Well, I'm not sure, but you're absolutely right. They didn't have jumbos, did they, Virgin? They had a wide-bodied plane, so to speak, which I think only had two engines. I think it was quite revolutionary to get across the Atlantic on two engines. And if you were in Virgin upper class, right, you could use a lounge, couldn't you, with a circular table in the middle where they'd bring you your meal and all that. And I remember on one,
The upper class was where you sat if you were basically first class passengers.
Yes, that's right.
You sat upstairs. Yeah,
but there was a lounge attached to it, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was another bit where they had a bar in the middle.
Yeah, that's right.
And you could go and sit at the bar and things like that.
Absolutely. I flew to South Africa once with Ray Parler, you know, the Arsenal footballer. We're going there to do, I think it was before the World Cup in South Africa, for the World Cup draw or something like that. And Ray and I sat at the bar all the way there. It was fantastic. You know, if you were in upper class, you were entitled to use the bar. We sat on two bar stools. On another occasion, I flew to LA to, believe it or not, to go to a radio conference for some strange reason. TalkSport sent me to a radio conference in LA. And I hate radio conferences. I don't know about you, but they're just a waste of time, you know, talking shop and all that.
But somebody... Why didn't do it on the radio? Then nobody has to go anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. But somebody in higher management thought this will be really good for, you know, Mike Parry. He's the program director. We'll send him to this radio conference in LA. So they sent me in business class, but you were Virgin upper class. They fly to LA, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, and again, I sat at the bar for 13 hours, literally, from London Heathrow to, no, London Gatwick, I think they flew from, didn't they? To Los Angeles at that bar. It was fantastic. But the reason I love the jumbos is because if you were lucky enough to get upgraded to first class in a jumbo, no finer service in the world. You have your fillet steak when you want it, not when they start serving the food and all that. And I think I've told you the story. I was coming back from LA on another occasion. I'd been in Las Vegas, and I had to go from Las Vegas to LA and then get the British Airways jumbo home. I got Joan Collins seat because she'd cancelled a couple of hours before the flight took off. And I was treated, it was seat 4A. Everybody told me she had 1A, but this evening it was 4A. And you have anything you want whenever you want it, literally. It was fantastic.
They thought you were Joan Collins.
Well, I acted like Joan Collins, I suppose, except apparently Joan goes to the, you'll know this better than me, she actually demands her own personal bathroom for 2 hours before she gets down in London, so that she can make herself look as glamorous as she always is. So if some paparazzi suddenly jumps out when she lands at Heathrow, she looks fantastic.
Who wouldn't? But the one I miss, of course, is Concorde. So miss those flights to New York on the old Concorde. They were very noisy and the planes were very small inside.
Yes.
And when it broke the sound barrier, you know, it deafened you. It really did. But it was a thrill. And the idea of never going on that again is quite sad, I think.
I kind of don't agree. It was a thrill, obviously, to fly Concorde. I only ever flew it once. But I found it really cramped, very unsociable. What I loved about the jumbos in the early days, I mean, the way they lay them out now, all these stupid pods and all that kind of stuff, and people lying down in one place, sitting up in the other. In the original sort of business and first class jumbo areas, there was acres of floor space to walk around on. You could literally get out of your seat, walk past the person on your right because there was so much room, and then go two rows forward and have a chat with somebody sitting on the armrest of the seat opposite. They were lovely. They were like flying lounges, a lot of them. And the sight of seeing a British Airways jumbo jet coming into LAX or JFK, you know, John F. Kennedy, is just always made my heart sing. You know, I thought, wow, the world's favourite airline. So I really will miss them.
Yeah, well, I don't suppose any of us will be flying anywhere for a while, will we, sir?
Well, absolutely right. And also, the flying experience isn't quite that anymore, is it? You know what I mean?
It'll never be the same. Not until there's a vaccine.
Well, that's right.
Will we fly anywhere? I don't know. But no one's getting on a plane until there's a vaccine, not from my house.
No. Well, that's absolutely true. I know people who now want to go on holiday, and two of my mates have said their wives just won't get on a plane. You know, one of them's got a villa in Greece, but they can't get there because the wife won't fly. And I don't blame her, by the way.
Get a boat. We all need to get a boat.
Yeah, we need to get a boat. That's absolutely right. He thought of hiring a private plane, actually, and thought he'd take, you know, like extended members of the family, 10 of them. Problem was, it was 30 grand each way. I said he should have spent it. It would have been worth it. But anyway, there we are. So, Leslie Ann, we come to the end of another Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining me today. Where can people get hold of you?
Oh, on Twitter at LAJWriter.
That's right, absolutely. I'm Mike Parry 8, or you can contact us on planetporkypod@gmail.com. Everybody, thank you very much indeed for joining us. We'll be back again with you soon. Leslie Ann, as always, stay safe.
And you, Michael. See you soon. I cannot think for the life of me that sunlight gets through your thick skull, not yours. I'm not saying you've got a thick skull.
Yeah,
one has a thick skull. We all do.
Yeah.
Because we need that thick bone to protect our brains, our very delicate brains.
Yes.
But I don't believe the sunlight goes in through the skull. I think it's going in through the eyes.
Well, it is. But it goes in through your eyes. Sunlight goes
you
in through your eyes.
It can't go through your ear.
But it reaches your brain eventually. It goes through. Look, the eye is, you know, a bit of your head. And light goes in through your eye and reaches your brain. Why can't you shoot light up your ear, which is through your ear canal, to your brain? I, I
you might as well stick it up your nose.
Well, maybe.
Or elsewhere.
Maybe.
I might think of somewhere else you could stick it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Leslie Ann. If you wouldn't mind retaining those thoughts to yourself, please, because this is a family show, I would be very grateful indeed. Yeah, that's it, isn't it? You know, another bit of smut in the old Planet Porky podcast.
Have you ever met him?
Pete Best, no.
Yeah, I have. He's a lovely man.
Right.
He's never been bitter. He has a few regrets, but, you know, he went on to have a great life.
Yeah.
He continued
did he go
to
have a great life?
Yes.
What else?
Well, I'm about to tell you if you don't keep interrupting
me. Oh, right, okay.
She's allowed to be beautiful.
Yeah.
It's much more impressive to me that she's a doctor.
Oh, dear me. You can be very hard on these people sometimes, Leslie Ann.
No, I'm not being hard on her. I'm being hard on you.
Oh, right. That doesn't change.